All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
Sean, today we've got kind of a flight of persuasion. That's our term that we like to use.
Yeah, like a flight of beer. You got to stick with the theme.
Yep. So we're going to be talking about a number of different things. One is, I'm going to tease this. You may have a different teaser. You can throw something out behind that. Are YouTube's policies creating a persuasive environment around certain types of content? Are they making certain content more persuasive?
Yeah, when their policy is actually the opposite.
Yeah. Because I think they are.
That's a good point. Unintended consequences.
That's right.
Yeah. So, all right. Yeah. And I've got a couple different things we might hit on depending on time. I've got some, you know, the best, like 15 best ways. I won't do all 15, pick one or two, you know, ways to start your persuasive, whether it's a letter, email, sales letter, PowerPoint, whatever it is, like 15 different ways you could start it.
Right.
Got some bullet secrets, like how to write really persuasive bullets. So got some of that we can cherry pick from.
That ties in really well with our last episode, kind of the cognitive ease, because that's part of cognitive ease is creating, if you can create simple lists or bullets that are easy to read, that's what people like. You know, that's that system one brain really loves. They really love that kind of stuff if you can create those.
Well, you know, speaking of system one brain, system two, and the last episode, you know, we stream live on YouTube.
Yep.
And my wife was listening during the last episode while we talked about.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Where understanding your wife. What system that is. So here was a comment. Do you really want to know what your wife is thinking now? Was the text that came in during that episode.
Oh, so okay.
I didn't see it as it was going, cause I put my phone face down while we're recording, but
yeah,
just thought I'd bring that up. I wasn't talking about her. I was talking about your wife, not mine.
So what system did she think, or she was just making a comment to you?
I don't know. I ran back up here and to hide. So need a little more time buffer.
All right. Lock the door. There you go. Yeah.
All right. So before we get into the show, let's talk beverages.
Yes.
And, I did not even realize it when I was at the store, but I actually picked the same brewing company, I guess, because they were next to each other.
Oh.
But I didn't put two and two together. So this will be the third beer I think we featured on the show from this particular brewing company, Real Ale Brewing Company here in Texas. That's interesting. But
hold
it's,
it up. Let me see.
I ended up getting a big bottle.
Oh, nice.
It's called Real Heavy and it's a Scotch Ale.
Ooh.
Have you had any Scotch Ales?
I had the, it was the Kentucky Bourbon series. They have a Scotch Ale that I had a few weeks ago. So
yeah, there's one called Old Scotch Ale that is really good, but I mean, and it's like, it is a wallop, like it's 14.5% alcohol or something. Like it's almost like, malt liquor. Mm-hmm. It's kind of in that category almost.
Oh,
so it's nice. A little stronger. This says rich and malt driven, part Highlands, and part Hill Country. Can't get my Scottish accent there, but so this one is a Scotch Ale brewed by metal aficionados, could be called nothing else but Real Heavy. Our take on the wee heavy style is an imposing malt forward brew weighing in at 9.3% ABV. It is brewed with English crystal malt, English hops, and fermented with our house English ale yeast, resulting in a rich brown color and toffee accented malt character. Bang your head with a couple of pints of Real Heavy. So it's interesting. This is a Scotch ale and everything in it is English. That seems, seems like a little war ready to happen in my glass. I don't know. So,
I love this.
It's hard to do when I can't really I have no leverage in front of the mic there. So.
There we go.
That was awkward. All right. So yeah, this is that, you know, still that ale color.
It's an ale.
So we're definitely in the ale category. I'm curious to see if you're going to keep the trend, if you're going to buck the trend and go in a different direction
for this episode.
All right.
So it looks like a little darker than the last episode.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. What do you got?
So this one is bound to be better than last one. I have a Guinness Over the Moon Milk Stout on this episode.
Oh yeah. Guinness Milk Stout. Like, it's going to be hard to screw that one up.
Yeah. You, there's no way to go bad here, but, so it's, it says, let's see.
That's an awfully like bright can for Guinness, you know?
It is. It's brewed in Baltimore after 200 years plus of making the world's most popular dry stouts. We have decided it was time to brew a sweeter style. So our American brewing team developed a milk stout, meaning a stout brewed with lactose, which in part gives it a sweet creaminess to this beer. So Over the Moon Milk Stout has notes of caramel, chocolate, light roastiness that remind some people of historic stouts. However, it finishes with a sweetness characteristic of milk stouts. So we shall see.
So in other words, sales were down.
Oh, goodness.
So they had to go with the trend of milk stouts because sales were down.
That's right.
Market share was dropping rapidly. That is dark.
It is.
It's getting nice. Especially after drinking all these ales. That's pretty dark.
Yep. Nice head. So so cheers.
All right. Cheers. That's a nice touch on video.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. I don't know if I would even prime with having a bad experience. So I've gone the opposite. You know, it's so sweet. And I almost, because the last one was so, there was so much lime in it that I think I was ready for something sweet. So I don't know if, it's hard to tell if this is too sweet because I really wanted something to offset that. So
yeah.
It's really good though.
Yeah, mine's really good. It's actually very like clean. There's I guess it's the malt, but it's got a little bit smoky malt taste, you know, almost like a whiskey or something like that, or scotch, I guess that would make sense, right? Scotch ale. Mm-hmm. So it's got that smokiness of a scotch.
Yep.
But then everything else is just like super clean. Like you could, this could be dangerous because it could be, it sips pretty clean. Like, you know, it's not too heavy, even though it's called real heavy. It's not
that.
It doesn't drink heavy.
Right.
Despite the 10%, almost 10% alcohol. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, this one, I can taste a little espresso, chocolate. Not so much, it says caramel, but I'm not tasting a lot of caramel there. But I really like the espresso.
Yeah, I love the anything with the coffee notes in it.
Yep.
When I was there in Knoxville, we used to go to Honeybee Cafe all the time. Mm-hmm. And they'll put an espresso because they have coffee. It's a coffee shop, but they also have like six beers on tap usually. Right. And they'll actually put a shot of espresso in your beer.
Mm.
And man, that's really good.
Really good. So, yeah. All right. So
rating. This is good. I don't know if it's, I'm going to give this one like a 3.9. I can't quite give it a 4.
Okay.
It may get better, but I'm going to go with like a 3.9. It's a contender for sure.
Yeah.
It does have a little bit of an aftertaste after the second thing here. But it's just, I've never had a beer that tastes like this. This is brand new as far as the taste that I've never had a beer that's this smoky.
Okay.
So it's interesting. I'm trying to decide if I like it or not. So 3.9 for now.
3.9? 3.9 is not a terrible rating. So that's a decent.
Not an Amazon. Yeah, it's not an Amazon review that'll put you out of business. No, but no,
exactly.
We're trying to be realistic here. We don't want all fours and fives.
That's right. So I'm going to give this one because it's really not. I don't think it's overly sweet. Let me try one more time here. No, I think that's good. I mean, and I at this point, I really don't think I'm influenced by the last. So I'm going to give this like a 4. I'm going to give this like a 4.2.
Nice.
Yeah, it's good. I like it. I love the coffee, the espresso, and the chocolate. You would think a milk stout, you know, a milk stout might be with the caramel and everything. You know, the caramel milk stout might be a little sweet, but it's not too much. So
yeah, some of those milk stouts are definitely very sweet, but yeah. Especially if they're imperial. I guess the imperials get really sweet. But
yeah.
Well, good. Glad you had a comeback, a winner there.
Yes.
That was close. So we were talking right between episodes. Mm-hmm. We were talking and that we decided that the previous beer from a solid brewery, but that was the first beer in a year and a half that you have not finished.
That's right.
I mean,
that's right.
That says a lot.
Down the drain. I took it to the poured out. Yeah. I took it to the bathroom and poured it down the sink. So I'm sorry, founders. But I'm not impressed with your mas agave.
No mas
for me.
Good thing that was a singles purchase.
Yes, it was, because that's a giveaway right there. I would have given the rest of that away to someone. So unfortunate though, founders, man. You know, you go the breakfast stout, the backwoods, the bastard, whatever. That's right. All those.
But all right, well, let's jump into some persuasion, some flights of persuasion.
All right.
I'll let you kick it off. You had a really good idea right before the show. I mean, this is the kind of in-depth prep that we do on this show. So about two minutes before we rolled, we're like, what do we talk about? I don't know. What do you want to talk about?
Yeah.
Let me pull a couple books from people who actually spent time researching and writing. And then Jonathan remembered that there's something going around this week. It's going viral, in fact.
It's going viral despite all the efforts to eliminate its viral spread. I guess you would compare it to maybe the coronavirus, you know, people are trying to, people are trying to flatten that, you know? So, but this is not seeming to work. So there's an interesting, video out called The Plandemic that has to do.
So let's just stop there for a second. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Cause Tamara actually, I'm way behind on social media stuff. Cause this new job I've got is taking a lot of time.
Right.
So I'm just not on social media as much as I used to be. Mm-hmm. I'm actually working now. It's kind of weird. So
tell me, what's that like?
It's tough. It's tough. I don't know how people do this all the time, but it's good. But so when she told me about this thing and this video, and she said the name was The Plandemic, I was like, that's a good name.
Yeah.
Like that is, I mean, we've talked about 3-word rebellions in the past, like a 1-word.
Absolutely.
Is just like, oh, that's such a great play on words because it fits into any of the conspiracy theories, right? It doesn't matter which one. If there's a conspiracy theory tied to the pandemic, then just, I mean, one letter, it's amazing. One letter, plandemic, like just how powerful and how easily that ties in. It goes back to what we were talking about last episode as well. Like the ease, the familiarity, so it rhymes with, if you think about it, it rhymes with the original idea.
Yeah.
So it kind of, even though it's not like a rhyme scheme thing, it rhymes with the original idea. So it's immediately accepted. It's familiar. I think that was one of the things, right? Familiar.
Yep.
Let's see, true, good, familiar, effortless. So it's definitely familiar.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so yeah, just that alone. And that's one, I think one of the reasons it's gone viral. But your point is this thing keeps getting taken down.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the idea is that, well, this violates our terms and it's, you know, playing off of this event or whatever, but you asked an interesting question about it.
Yeah. So I asked, is the principle of scarcity taking place? So, you know, scarcity principle, when something is not available, it's more in demand, people want it. Mm-hmm. So every time YouTube Takes Action or any of these other platforms, whether it's Vimeo, YouTube, I think Vimeo's taken it down as well. And so when that happens, people start to question, okay, what's the deal? I'm curious. I'm very curious. Not, and you made a great point. Plandemic is a great name. I think it's very memorable. We talked about on the last episode, you know, hitting that, level one. So, you know, the cognitive ease there, Plandemic. That's a good title. I can remember that. I'll remember that always.
Yeah.
Because it rhymes with what? Pandemic. So there we go. I haven't even seen the video. Full disclosure, neither. So it sounds like neither one of us have actually watched the video. So we're not talking this is not a point of whether we think anything in the video is true or not. The point is this video is very persuasive to the point that I will say that I am looking, I pulled up an article on Forbes, and Forbes has gone out of their way to say why it's important to push back on the plandemic and how to do it.
Wow.
Now, so, I mean, so, okay. So when, you know, you got companies like YouTube or you got platforms like YouTube taking it down, and then there's an effort on an article from a company of, you know, Forbes, which, you know, I read a lot of articles on Forbes, but here's an article that says why you need to push back on it. Right. Mm. So that builds a little curiosity right there.
Well, and it just does the exact, like to your point, it does the exact opposite, right? Because if you're not going to convince anybody who's against it that it's, you know, that it's going to be good, and you're not going to convince anybody that's for it,
right,
that it's bad. So all you do when YouTube takes it down is you add validity to the story. And actually, I did watch like the first half of it.
Okay.
And it's exactly what you would expect it to be. Mm-hmm. But it's really well done. It's shot in documentary style. It's an interview with lots of B-roll footage and things like that. Mm-hmm. But it's really well done. In fact, I grabbed it and put it, gave it to one of our video editors or one of my clients.
Right.
I was like, this is a great like documentary style video. We ought to do this for our company here.
Absolutely.
And the video editor actually said, she's like, yeah, it's actually really simple. It's just an interview with B-roll footage.
Yeah.
But the way they pieced it together and everything was really, really powerful.
Sure.
But like you said, the fact that YouTube puts it down, you know, now people can share it and be like, you got to watch this before they take it down again. They keep taking it down. Right. So it adds urgency.
Urgency. Yeah.
You know, and real urgency, like not made up urgency. Mm-hmm. Like we like, you know, a lot of marketers have to manufacture because they just, you know, it's not real. And then, you know, that did happen with, the End of America promotion.
Yeah.
They would not put it like it was so successful. They, you know, I was at Stansberry back then or I just left Stansberry. But so I was kind of still in the loop, but, they were trying to buy TV time to air that and they got banned by like Fox and CBS. Like, so literally got banned. And of course, what is any good copywriter going to do immediately? Like they're going to now, it's kind of like when you become a New York Times bestseller or an Amazon bestseller, now you slap that on everything.
Right. Yep.
So now you're like slapping on the top of that band, you know, by three networks or four networks.
That's right. Creates curiosity.
The same thing is happening here. Yep. Like now people can post on their Facebook and link to it and say, you got to watch it before it gets taken down.
Yeah.
And this is like, it's crazy because people are literally downloading it and saving it so they can re-upload. There's this like grassroots cooperation that the maker of the video isn't even happening to do, but people are re-uploading every time it gets taken down. So it's actually, it's like a hydra. It's like actually expanding its footprint.
And what's happening is, I think it's not only are people re-uploading it to YouTube, but they're also putting it on other less known, video hubs, you know, like, that are similar that don't have aren't as well known as YouTube, but they're putting it out there.
Personal sites, personal blogs and things like that.
Yep.
They can't get taken down.
Right. Exactly.
If you have the right host, obviously. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
So, and there's enough smart people out there to do that. But then to your point, like Forbes now is, you know, like, oh, this is bad. You gotta not, which just adds to the narrative.
Yeah. Why it's important to push back on Plandemic. Okay. So that immediately that headline, I don't know who did that headline, but that makes me cringe a little, because why it's important. It's almost like you're telling me what to think. Okay. Before I even know anything about it.
Yeah.
But this author, I'm reading this author who's the, she's a senior contributor at Forbes, Tara Haley or Hale. But anyway, I'm going to go down to, I'm reading an excerpt. So she says, why is this video suddenly? So she's asking the question, why is this video suddenly everywhere? Why are so many people drawn to it? And so she answers the question. This video has been extremely successful at promoting misinformation for three reasons. First, it taps into people's uncertainty, anxiety, and need and a need for answers. Common reason everyone is attracted to conspiracy theory, right? Second, it is packaged very professionally and uses common conventions people always associate with factual documentaries. Sorry. And then third, it successfully exploits ancient but extremely effective methods of persuasion. Yes. And she doesn't do a good job. Yeah, she says that, but then she doesn't do a good job of going into what those effective persuasion methods are. She just throws
out three big general statements with right. You know, no backing, no right. proof, no nothing, yeah. To watch it. So, I mean, yeah, that's not why or...
Right.
Why you should push back or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But it's fascinating. Just now people can say, look, even Forbes is like part of the people trying to push back
right.
on this.
Right.
You know, and then that anybody that believes that whole narrative, again, not saying if it's right or wrong,
yep.
is like, there's the old, for years now, there's been, you know, the whole conspiracy theory that majority of networks and news media are owned by like three people, right? Mm-hmm. Which is true. I mean, yep. there's basically three or four, I can't remember the number, yep. big media companies that own most of the newspapers, magazines, TV stations, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So this just feeds right into that narrative that they're right. pushing back and they have their own agenda, which just makes it spread even faster.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. Now, the flip side of that is maybe Forbes is super smart. And they know mm-hmm. that they're actually going to get fans of the video to read that article
sure.
as opposed to, you know, people who don't agree with it. Or right. maybe they know they'll hit both
yeah.
by using a headline like that.
Yeah.
So I was talking with, we were at a little outing last night. We actually were not social distancing and we just were like hanging out mm-hmm. first time in 6 weeks.
Right.
And... Because we were under six, so we were legally okay, mm-hmm. although we weren't social distancing, but
sure.
hey, we're rebels.
Right.
But we were talking about how, you know, YouTube videos, if you really want to get a lot of views, you kind of say the opposite mm-hmm. of what you think people want. So an example I gave was when I was looking at buying a Jeep, mm-hmm. my Jeep Wrangler. You know, you do all kinds of research and all this kind of stuff. And the most popular videos are like five things I don't like about my Jeep Wrangler.
Yeah.
Five things I don't like about my F-150. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause if you're thinking about buying, you want to know, cause you don't want to make a mistake. It goes back to that famous headline. Are you making these mistakes in English? Right. So there's a lot of YouTube videos that are kind of the same way. They take kind of the opposite approach and it's like, you know, it's, are you making these mistakes, you know, when buying a Jeep or these are things I don't like about my Jeep. You got to watch that if you're thinking about buying it. Mm-hmm. Those things have hundreds of thousands of views and those guys are making all kinds of money on ad revenue because they take kind of that opposite antagonistic approach. So it's interesting how, yeah, these little things of persuasion are just, you know, all yep. over the place, which is why we do this show. So
absolutely.
Yeah, that video is pretty interesting to watch mm-hmm. and, you know, it'll be interesting to see, like, does it continue to spread? Cause I think it just launched this week.
It did. Yeah.
And already it's like, I mean, we're talking about it. I'm sure other people are talking about it. Forbes is obviously talking about it. I mean, Forbes is, you know, under us as far as popularity, but
sure,
you know, they're
No one
they're talking about it.
But I think you made a good point earlier. It's like people, when they repost, a lot of people, whether if they're putting it up on or linking to it on social media, mm-hmm. they're saying things like, you know, check this out because it's not going to last long. You know, yep. Facebook, YouTube, you name it, they're going to pull it. So you yep. better check it out. So people are jumping on, you know, scarcity, yep. Knowing that something may not last is creating the opposite effect. For what I think a lot of these platforms are intending. They're trying to squish it, but what they're doing is spreading it. So
yeah, they're feeding it for sure.
Yeah.
So let's see if it's, so I just pulled up the old Twitter here mm-hmm. and it's not streaming today, at least mm-hmm. not in the top, not on my trendings anyway. So that's interesting.
And the thing, you know, here's the thing.
Unless they're not posting it because they don't want you to know it's trending.
And persuasion. And we talk about, you know, persuasion, the last thing you want to do is give, if you're disagreeing or you're trying to discredit something, the last thing you want to do is give it another platform, right? And right. Forbes, yeah. What you just made the comment that they could be using it to obviously get more clicks, which is most, I would guess that that's probably the agenda behind this, because if they were truly wanting to really people to ignore it, they probably, you know, the best way to discredit something is to ignore it sometimes and you know, as opposed to giving it all you're doing, if you continue to talk about it, you're just keeping it alive that much longer. So
this is what we've talked about with, you know, Trump and yep. his ability to control mm-hmm. the news cycle. That's right.
Yep.
So even if people hate him, the media hates him, he has figured out that if I can control the news cycle,
yeah,
it doesn't matter if people are talking good or bad about me.
Right.
You know, they're talking about me.
Yep.
Who was the person that says, who said there's no such thing as bad press? Like originally it was either Zsa Zsa Gabor or some, yeah. you know,
that's right.
One of those people, I don't remember exactly who it was, but yeah. So, you know, it's working.
It's true in this day and age for sure. Yeah.
It's interesting. Like if I type in hashtag plandemic, then all kinds of posts come up. But for whatever reason, it is not showing in trending despite, you know, every post I see.
Twitter is removing a lot of that, I'm sure.
Yeah. Every post I see has hundreds of shares and retweets and likes and everything else, if not more. So it's definitely still on there.
So here's something the author, so just reading a little further. So the author, she does give some further down you read, she gives some examples of using, of it being persuasive, kind of using some of the art of persuasion. And I just lost my place. Doggone it. she talks about using the, some of the Aristotelian type of,
wow, that's a fancy word.
Yeah.
Aristotelian. I've never heard that word.
Aristotelian.
Is that like an aristocrat that looks like a lizard? Is that the Illuminati that are lizard people, or which one is that? Which conspiracy theory? You know what I'm talking about? There's a conspiracy theory that like the leaders are like these lizard animal things. Oh, come on, man. You don't know that one?
Lizard like as in aliens or?
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You keep going. I'm going to look it up.
You know what comes to mind? I don't know if you remember because we're about the same age. That old, what was that TV series V back in the day? Back in the 80s? Do you remember that V? Where the aliens came and they looked like us, but underneath the skin, they were like lizards. So,
yep.
All right. So here I've got it pulled up. This video successfully employs pathos and ethos to persuade people. Aristotle introduced a concept over 2000 years ago that remains more relevant than ever. Modes of persuasion or rhetorical appeals. Three main appeals speakers can use to persuade others are ethos, pathos, and logos. Ethos is an appeal to the credibility or authority of the speaker. how they come across. So the entire first third, I guess the first third of this documentary, Plandemic, is dedicated to setting up Dr. Judy Mikovits up as a trustworthy expert on everything the video discusses. She sounds and looks calm, collected, and competent. She uses scientific but understandable language. She tells a personal story that helps viewers connect with her and with the interviewer, who also come across as compassionate, thoughtful, and empathetic.
So here's what's going through my mind right now. like, yes, those things are all persuasive.
Yeah.
But just because something's persuasive doesn't mean it's not true.
Right.
Yep. Which is the kind of the way she's framing this.
Sure.
While writing a persuasive article.
Mm-hmm.
So she's using the very tactics
exactly
that she's like saying are just evil. And
yeah.
What was the word? Aristolizard?
Aristotelian. Aristolizard. Yeah. I like Aristolizard.
Yeah. So it is. It's 12 million people in the U.S. believe that interstellar lizards in people suits rule our country.
That's V. That's a series V. I mean, that.
Yeah. So
I'm sure that had a profound effect on their thinking. So
12 million people. That's not, I mean, I would love to have that niche as a customer base for sure. Not that niche necessarily, but like 12 million people as my customer base. That would be great.
No doubt.
So yeah. So that's interesting.
All right. So here's the other two. Appeal pathos, appeal to emotion. He says the video appeals to viewers' emotions by portraying Mikovits as a victimized underdog by repeatedly using stock video of harrowing images such as patients dying from AIDS and malnourished children in Africa. The video claims people are dying because they cannot get the appropriate treatment they need.
Huh, that sounds vaguely familiar. Seems like every news show I've ever watched.
Exactly. what was the new, was it CBS? It was using footage from, I think, Italy, you know?
Yeah.
That's crazy that, and then lastly, Logos is an appeal to facts and logic. This is where the film falls flat. Okay. So this is where she's trying to, undermine it here. But it doesn't matter to many people because it so successfully uses ethos and pathos. So she doesn't really go into detail of why it falls flat. She just.
We know, and listeners of this show know that like logic is the last thing people use
it's
in reality.
That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, people make their decisions emotionally. So, if you're going to convince somebody, yeah, logic reinforces, but you don't actually need it.
Sure. So. Yeah, you don't. I mean, it's what people use to justify it. But if you use the emotion first, people are going to use their own methods. I think people use their own methods of justifying it using their own logic to make sense of it.
Yeah, if you ramp the emotion high enough,
you don't
actually need the logic.
Right.
Like it helps give them something to work with. Mm-hmm. But like you said, most people will find their own very quickly. Mm-hmm. And better than you could ever provide if you've gotten the emotion dialed in.
Just like we talked about Trump, people will forever, whatever reason they voted for him, he's going to build a wall. He's going to do this or that. People left that to they're open to interpretation. So the emotion was there. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to fill in how they believe that's going to all work out. Yep. Well, I know how he's going to do it. And that could be completely different from, this guy over here, what he thinks. So,
yeah, exactly. So, that's good stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I wonder how many other hit pieces are being done on that at the moment. Probably like, did you just type in like Plandemic? Is that what you?
Plandemic. Plandemic.
Top stories. So the Washington Post. It's got an article.
And here's what's happening is I actually pulled this. This Forbes magazine is from someone who shared it on Facebook. So, I just don't get it. So people are trying to discredit it. So the more they try to discredit it by sharing it, the more it spreads.
Yeah. That's true in so many things.
Yeah.
Like if you really want to kill something, you just ignore it.
Yeah.
You know, it's you don't talk about it.
Yeah,
like that exactly. That just feeds the fire. I don't care which side you're on. Mm-hmm. It feeds the fire.
Right.
And, you know, from a marketer, we can use that to our advantage and just keep people talking about us.
Right.
You know, good or bad. It's kind of like when you see the, you know, a lot of marketers get worried when there's negative comments on their ads or things like that. And yeah, I mean, you know, you can hide them or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or you can get in a dialogue with them.
Yeah.
And what'll happen is your fans will come to your rescue.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The people that aren't will, mm-hmm. I mean, you don't want people, you know, saying your ad is like completely inappropriate and all that kind of stuff. Cause it will get taken down, but you can actually let a little banter go back and forth and be willing to engage those people that don't like it.
Absolutely.
Because it actually helps because it shows the ad is active and that you're responding to it and all this stuff. But yeah, there's like on this pandemic, NPR's got an article on it. Factcheck.org, Forbes, CNET, BBC, TechCrunch. I mean, TechCrunch is like, I mean, TechCrunch, this is a very political, you know, ad, and TechCrunch is writing an article on it. Platform scramble as pandemic conspiracy video spreads. So they're
again, you spreads. Know. It's spreading. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
So it's, I don't know. It's kind of like you said, it's like the Trump effect, you know, the more they try to discredit, he's living, I mean, this video is living rent free in everyone's head and everyone's articles and everyone's discussion on social media. So they're having, it's having the complete opposite effect.
Yeah. Yeah. It's talking about how, I mean, all exactly what you said. It's like, sometimes this title is removed and reworded to make it more difficult to detect by AI.
Right.
You know, it's been marked unsafe, which, you know, it just feeds the narrative. It's like you couldn't ask for a better publicity campaign for the video.
It's almost like they,
because like of what it's, it. Yeah, because that's exactly what the video says is that like, you know, all these corporations, all this stuff is this is all a plan and they're trying to keep you in the dark. Mm-hmm. So when people start banning it, it's like, oh, it is true. Like you just, and, you know, they're scrambling so much to hide it that it's actually making the case, making the video more credible instead of less.
Yeah, absolutely.
At least for the group that's already going to believe it anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, fascinating stuff.
Well,
I don't even know that we have much time for anything else.
I think we, I'm sorry, man.
Yeah, we'll have to
save sucked up all your
man. We'll have to pull out the old, let's see, I've got 21 bullets secrets that ignite the selling power of your copy.
Yeah.
That might be a good episode right there. So we'll have to save that for a future date.
Yeah. I think we should do that. That's a show in and of itself. Be a good follow up and, maybe tag along with the book Thinking Fast and Slow. Some of the stuff we discussed there. So
bouncing back and forth between that book and other stuff. Hope everybody can keep up. You know, that's
And writing without the BS. That would be a nice time.
I need to go ahead and order that. I'll get that on order. That's one of the things I do when I'm editing other people's copies. I see a lot of that. Like it's very lazy, you know, writing too many words, you know, 11 word or 14 word sentence when it could be eight, you know. And that adds up over the course of a course of a letter. And it's fine on the first draft. It's when you get into your, you know, that's what the kind of things you got to edit out, which we talked about in, Halbert.
Yeah.
The Halbert book, Halbert 3.0 or whatever that was, the how to edit copy. But yeah, I'm excited to get that book. Cause one of my favorite books that I try to read every year is Strunk and White, The Elements of Style, which is more of a, college textbook. It's very short. You can read it over lunch, but it's just a reminder of those kinds of things.
Yeah. I tell you what, you know what? I'm going to reach out to this, Josh Burnoff. See if he can join us next week.
Oh, he can join us. Yeah.
I think he would.
Yeah. Yeah. If we, he'll join us. I'm going to go ahead and manifest it, put it out there to universe. Like, just say, hey, he's Josh on. Is going to be on the show.
We're already, we've got him locked up already. So yep. Plan on it.
I mean, how could he not? It's persuasion by the pint. I mean, how could he say no?
Hey, let's see. He has been a professional business writer for more than 30 years, including 2 decades as a renowned technology analyst.
Does it say where he lives?
Let's see. He's the author of 3 books on business strategy, including the bestseller Groundswell. No, it doesn't say where he lives. So,
Hopefully he's in the Northeast and he can't go anywhere.
I would guess probably that's pretty likely. So,
yeah. So
we'll try to get
him. All right. Well, good show. Your beer's still good. I know the last one didn't get better. Is this
still
one?
Good? I'm unfortunately I've been so engrossed in our conversation that has nothing to do with the beer. So still got the 4.2 rating.
Yeah.
I'm sticking with that. So
okay.
And you're still at the 3.9.
Yeah.
If I recall.
Yep. 3.9. I'm going to stick with 3.9. I could go to 4. I could add some decimal places, you know, get right between there, 3.95. But
yeah.
I'm going to save the four categories for those truly special beers. Sure. Yep. But
yeah.
If you really like the smokiness of a scotch and you like beer, I think it's a win for sure. Okay.
Good.
It's actually very different than most of the other Scotch ales I've had. It's got more smoke than most.
Okay.
And on the label is a picture of a sword. So, I mean, that's even more reason to buy it.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
It's a manly. It's got a sword. Yeah.
I just like that t-shirt you've got on. I mean, I'm really sad about the coffee, because if the coffee was any good, I would order it just for that t-shirt.
Well, they do have a Valhalla blend,
yeah,
which is kind of cool. I don't know if they have shirts for it, so you could, same company, you could get the shirt but get the Valhalla blend coffee.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, so yeah,
maybe not that. As bitter.
Yeah, it's not as like whatever this stuff is. You have to read up about it, but yeah it's not good. I mean, if you just, I mean, I guess if you were dousing it with cream or something, it would be okay. But I drink mine fairly. I mean, black. I put butter in it.
Yeah.
I don't do black, but I do butter. But it's not like, it's just a very small sliver. I don't do like the 2 tablespoons like some people do.
Right.
So it's pretty close to, you know, regular taste. It's just wasn't for me. But like I said, I love the t-shirt. Like Death Wish Coffee, it's just like.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Big skull and crossbones. This is what I wear if I need to go shopping and I don't want to wear a mask. Like between the beard and the skinned head and this shirt.
People don't question.
Like they're not going to ask me to wear a mask. They're just going to be like, oh, yeah.
Whatever.
They don't even make eye contact. Like I try to. And they're like, no.
Nah, not going to say anything.
He looks pretty serious. That's my MO.
I'll keep my mouth shut. Yeah, you go about your business.
This guy could pop off at any moment. I'm going to.
Absolutely.
So.
All right. Well, thanks guys for listening. As always, you can find us at persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on any podcast platform that you access your favorite podcast. Sean, it's been fun, man. We look forward to next week on talking about some persuasion, writing persuasive bullets in your copy. I like that.
And hopefully Josh will be on with us as well.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Thanks, man. See you guys next week.
See ya.